Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay. Disaster. I can't stop it moving far faster. I'm asking, can you own the wheel for a second? I'm new. I just wanna make things clear. One cup of coffee and I'm on my way home. No breaks in the danger zone. And you know you don't mind. You know you don't mind. No.
All right, we are back. This is Sportsaholics episode number 102. Let me hear it. I'm not sure exactly what the whistle or what to call this episode. And before we even get started, let me explain the audio. It's going to sound a little bit differently. My mixer cut out. And so right now I've rigged up something and it's working. And quite honestly, I've listened to some other sports podcasts and baseball podcasts, Eric, and they sound way worse than what this is going to sound like. So I'm actually very comfortable.
All right, guys, everyone out there in Sportsaholics land, you all have to listen to me. I have been kidnapped by John Sheezer. He has trapped me in a small metal box. If I don't sound right, it's because I've been kidnapped, and he is keeping me in a small metal box in his apartment in San Diego. I'm trapped, people. Kidnapped me and he's forcing me to make sports podcasts until I give him what he wants. I'm trapped. Send help. Send help.
Yeah, so that's right now I'm adjusting volumes and it sounds good. I've got it kind of just whatever. We're gonna
I'm
run
in the box. I'm just at your mercy, so I have to talk about whatever you want me to talk about.
Well, it's I really wanted you to just how are you feeling after the letdown of the Final Four? Or was it even a letdown?
I mean, it was the letdown of the final. There was two letdowns. I mean, you know, it was like, first of all, I had to lose to UNC. And guys, if anybody knows me, it's been 84 weeks since my breakup with my girlfriend, who was part of our very first episode.
Who's counting? Who's counting?
84 weeks ago, terrible breakup, 7 years relationship. She moved to North Carolina. My Syracuse Orange lose to North Carolina. The state that's so terrible, it ripped my girlfriend away from me. It doesn't let transgender people go into whatever bathroom they want. It's like all of a sudden, North Carolina is the most racist state of all time, and it has to beat Syracuse in the Final Four. And on top of that, Gino Auriemma's UConn has to beat the Syracuse women in the finals. It was just a blow after blow after blow.
So maybe it's just a Carolina conspiracy. Because, I mean, it seems to me that South Carolina is probably the most racist.
Why would you say that? They just started the Civil War.
Exactly. And then I'd say North Carolina, they're maybe the most homophobic.
Yes.
All right, absolutely. That concludes this absolutely. Week's episode. Thanks, guys. No, but, I mean, you weren't expecting any sort of run at all, and some people thought you shouldn't even have made it into the tournament, and it was kind of like a big, nice middle finger from Jim Boeheim to the NCAA. It was like, oh, thanks
it's
for
a
the...
Good, it's a great Boeheim legacy Final Four, if that makes sense. It's interesting that, you know, it's like, look, Jim Boeheim has put Syracuse in a position in the Final Four in 87 against Indiana, in 96 with John Wallace. 2003, he wins a national title with Carmelo Anthony. And then you're saying, like, in 2013 and 16, by the way, Trevor Cooney, of all Syracuse players, is the first Syracuse player to ever play in two Final Fours. He played one as a freshman and then again as a senior. It's like, this is really a testament to Jim Boeheim, the Syracuse Orange program. It's interesting. It's an interesting legacy sort of Final Four.
Well, and I'm happy to announce that just as of a few hours ago, the number one recruit in the country, Josh Jackson, is just committed to the University of Kansas, ladies and gentlemen. Not that it's going to matter. You know, that sounds like a nice Elite Eight run next year to me.
I didn't like watching Roy Williams beat Jim Boeheim, I'll tell you that. I did not like that. I really kind of wanted. I wanted some sort of Hakeem Warwick antics that would once again infuriate Roy Williams. I thought many Kansas people would be on my side. But it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be. And we're turning the page, and we're moving on to baseball. We're moving on to baseball.
So, I mean, how at the Royals right now, you know, fine. They look good. They won three in a row. What they just swept Minnesota. They lost as we're recording now. This is like 1 a.m. on Tuesday a.m. Monday night. Just lost the Astros. No big deal. The Royals look solid, and more importantly though, they sweep the Twins. They start out 0-6, and so already a steep hill to climb. And in a very tight competitive division, if we can eliminate the Twins by the end of April from contention, that's great. That's one less team you have to worry about. And I never thought I'd say something like that. Like, let's just go ahead and just stomp them out.
Yeah, but you know what? Look, it's like, remember, the most interesting thing about baseball, and this really is the most interesting thing about baseball when you think about it, is that every team in Major League Baseball wins a third of their games. And every team in Major League Baseball loses a third of their games. The essence of baseball is what happens with the other third and what does each team do with that other third of games. It's like, look, as you said, like, many players start hot. You know, there's a great story out of Colorado. This kid Story from Colorado has like 7 home runs in his first 6 games. And, you know, so he's on pace for, who God knows, 447 home runs or something like that. It's a ridiculous number. And eventually he will cool down. And there are some times where, you know, it's like my Red Sox have started out hot and they've started off cold. You guys are doing well. You know, the Twins, it's like, remember the year, the Oakland Athletics will suddenly, like, you know, in August, suddenly take over. Baseball's interesting, and, you know, we're not even in the right weather. It's one of those things where you go, like, God, it's like, the Red Sox, they canceled half the opening games. It was like they were in Cleveland, they delayed opening day, then they played a game, then they delayed the next day, then they played a game. It's like, we're not even ready for baseball, if that makes sense.
Well, I'm ready, and I proved that, you know, a long time ago, and it was great. I did opening day the right way this year, you know, got the tickets, got my souvenir. I got the opening day baseball Kershaw and a Clayton Kershaw at bat. So I'm happy to say got that with the little opening day emblem on it. Very, very excited.
Did you see Madison Bumgarner took Kershaw deep the other day?
Yeah, that's just what he does. And, you know, I'm just upset because the Dodgers blew like a 6-run lead 4 or 5 days ago in San Francisco. San Francisco is looks like they might be the team to beat in the National League.
Look, the Cardinals, the Giants, these are organizations that are really putting it together on sort of that New England Patriots, San Antonio Spurs level, where they have made sure their franchise competes year in, year out. Look, not every year are they actually going to win the title, but, you know, they are in like a decade, 15-year program where every other year, every third year, they really make a push. And it is something to see. It is really something to see. The other story I really love, which I think is so completely baseball, is the story of the Dodger rookie making his Dodger pitching debut and getting pulled while throwing a no-hitter in the eighth inning. I think he pitched 7 1/3 innings, and he was pulled. And then, of course, the Dodgers not only lost the no-hitter, they went on to lose the game. And I think there's almost, in some ways, like, that's a great baseball story. That's a classic baseball story.
That's one of those things where you're like, what are you doing, Dave Roberts? I know he's a young guy, but if he throws a no-hitter...
Well, he was coming off, like, look, he's coming off Tommy John surgery. He was limited pitch count of 100. He's in the eighth inning. He's not in the ninth inning. And, you know, in many ways, it makes prudent sense, except it doesn't make sense at all in the microcosm. Except, of course, you know, if he blows out his Tommy John elbow going for a no-hitter, maybe that's, you know, that, and this is what they're trying to do. But a classic baseball story, pulling a pitcher, a rookie pitcher, making his debut as a Dodger, no-hitter going, you pull him, you lose the game. Nothing to me is more baseball than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Dodgers probably had no choice. They've got very little depth at pitching somehow. I don't know. Greinke must have hated it a lot more than they let on for him to just go to Arizona. But, I mean, and they got Arizona. I mean, they were – a lot of people thought they were going to do good things, and now they're – one of their best players, A.J. Pollock, gets injured, like, I think at the end of spring training and is out for probably the rest of the season. So that pretty much – did them in before on opening day. And so they're kind of, and then the Padres set all sorts of records. The Dodgers, you know, swept them. You know, it was like 28-0 in three games. And then Padres turn around and score 37 runs in like 2.5 games. And then all of a sudden just flip it right around. It was like complete record-breaking performances on both ends. But I'm happy to say that I was at the record game for the biggest opening day shutout in Major League Baseball history. So that, you know, that's kind of cool. I like, you know, the being at an attendance.
Caesar, how was opening day in San Diego? Talk to us about it.
It was great. I mean, got there early. So our good friend of the show, Mark Cassidy, Los Angeles Dodgers fan, was on, I believe, episode 88, talking about the Dodgers and his love for them. Great banjo player, grew up in Huntington Beach, is in the critically acclaimed by Rolling Stone band, The Hillbenders. If you haven't heard them, check them out. But I got three opening day tickets. They were finishing up a tour in South Carolina. And then, so he flew into San Diego on the Monday morning. I picked him up at the airport. He had his Kershaw jersey on and Dodger hat right there at the airport. And so went down.
He was ready to go.
Oh, it was wonderful. And then cracked a few beers, went down to the park, just had a great time, ran around, then went out afterwards, got some food. And I mean, it was a Dodgers opening day. I felt so bad for Padres fans, because I mean, there were as many Dodgers fans there as Padres fans, no doubt about it. And even on opening,
I have to say, that is actually here's a weird thing to say, one of the nicer things about going down to San Diego is San Diego are actually really welcoming fans. I remember years ago when they first did Interleague and the Red Sox played for the very first time, I went down with my brother. Pedro Martinez was pitching, and I have to tell you, like, Pedro, the Red Sox, they won that game. The San Diego Padres fans couldn't have been nicer. It was like their pleasure to get beaten by Pedro Martinez. And then the next three games, the Red Sox came up to L.A. and were playing the Dodgers. And now, you know, the Dodgers and the Red Sox, while both, like, you know, over 100-year-old history franchises, both, they really have no history against each other. And so suddenly it's like having – I had just experienced probably the nicest enemy fan base of all time, the San Diego Padre fan. And then I went to Dodger Stadium, and I will never forget how badly I was treated as a Red Sox fan. When you said there's not really any natural animosity, and they were really, 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 really rude. So there's a point where I always kind of root for the San Francisco Giants since. I'll say that.
Well, I'll put it to you like this. I think it goes Dodger, probably Oakland, just on reputation as far as mean. But then after that, like, I had a great time in San Francisco at the World Series. Welcome to our stadium. Good luck, guys. I'm really happy for you guys. I'd be rooting for you if you weren't playing against the Giants. I mean, this is like people inside the game, you know. And so they were very pleasant. San Diego fans are great. And Angels fans,
even though you did actually get into, remember, you did actually get into a verbal altercation and knock the hat off a rival fan. Now, which, that is also true.
Which then it becomes a physical altercation in the eyes of the courts at that point. But I mean,
but you're saying how nice the San Francisco Giants fans are, except you actually did get into a semi scuffle.
It wasn't a scuffle. Look, I was I was going around high-fiving Giants fans. We were sitting in our seats. Everyone's having a good time. The old couple behind us with the dog. We're taking.
I love this story.
We're taking selfies with the dog, and like it's great. And we're just like looking at the bay. Rick and I having a good time, and you know we're just meeting people, high-fiving people. So a couple Giants fans come up. I high-five. Go to high-five the last one. Does the fake high five, and I'm like, and then he was like, "Oh, what are you gonna do?" And so I just knocked his hat off, and then he proceeded to sit down directly behind us, and then accidentally spill beer on Rick, I think at least two or three times.
See, and that's what I'm saying. Where by that story alone, you can't say it's like clearly San Diego fans are the nicer, more. There is no more ingratiating fan than the San Diego Padres fan.
Yeah.
They are the welcome mat of the league.
And I think partially because of down here where the stadium is. Like, from what I understand, nobody went downtown San Diego. You went down, you got your meal, and you got out. Like, no one hung around. And so once that stadium came in here, I mean, it's crazy. Like, they're building right now, I don't know, like, four or five. I mean, I'm talking to you. You're right across the street from a hotel going up. But there's like 10 of those going up downtown. It's just booming. Right. And so a lot of that has to do with that Padres stadium. And so a lot of it's kind of like, hey, come on, enjoy yourself. You're driving up our real estate and making us all millionaires as soon as we sell out. And so they actually don't mind because everyone works down here and there's just a lot of tourists down here. And so financially.
Now, is there a way in San Diego, just for the people who aren't from California, Caesar, let me just ask a question that maybe seems ridiculous, but I think lots of people who don't live in California want to know. Is it possible to surf directly into the stadium? Is that possible or not possible?
It's not possible. There's a couple rail lines. That, I mean, they could have built the stadium on the water. I'm kind of glad they didn't.
You could actually, you might have been able to paddleboard up, but you can't.
Yeah, it would have just, the view wouldn't have been that spectacular. So I'm kind of glad. You would have just been looking at a bunch of, it's like all the stuff that's on the other side of the bay in San Francisco that you can't see. It's like these huge ships that are coming in from Korea and Japan loaded to the,
right.
You know, 10 stories tall with all those cargo boxes. It's all that stuff, except for it's only like a half mile away, so you can see it clear as day. And so they turn the stadium so that it faces away from all that stuff. But look, they love visitors. They love the tourists. You can fly right in, hop on a taxi, and be at the stadium in 10 minutes. The airport's right downtown. I mean, they make it easy to be a sports fan.
San Diego, we love your tourist dollars.
Oh, yeah. And defending America. It's really just what it is. It's just a military base disguised as a city.
I know. At some point, it's always the funny thing. The funny thing to me about the San Diego Padres is that weird pull they have between their original McDonald's yellow and brown colors that are very Padre-like, like monks. Or a monastery order, and then there is they have these outfits that are like the naval camouflage outfits. They worked really hard to get blue and a wave.
That's the alter. That's the.
It's always very forced.
The camouflage is the Sunday military tribute day, and anytime most often
they do it every Sunday.
Every Sunday home game, and there's going to be thousands of guys. Of men and women in uniform everywhere in the stadium also. So that's another thing. There's military all over the place.
That's great.
No, it's good. It's a good time. Well, hey, let's take a break.
Oh, it was a great opening day at San Diego.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was my very first opening day. And, you know, like I recommended, go to spring training. I'm going to recommend you go to opening day if you can. Just pull the kids out of school. Take the day off. Call in sick. Say, hey, work. Sorry. Went to Vegas, got chlamydia, got to go to the doctor. It just happens to be on opening day.
It's great. Everyone should go to an opening day. I was happy. In 2000, I got to go to opening day in Seattle with the Red Sox. I got to see that season. I actually saw Fenway opening day where Carl Everett, C. Everett Koop, actually put out two that day, although I was late to Fenway opening day, so I only saw the second home run. You know, it's the great thing about opening day. David Ortiz homered on opening day in Cleveland. That's a great moment. You know, it's this Troy Story from Colorado. So many, you know, it's like he's been on hot streaks, homered in every game since opening day. Great story. Baseball's here. You know, Easter's happened. Jesus has risen. Spring is sprung. And we are all back and waiting for the boys of summer to take over.
It's great. And it's great. I mean, this past weekend, I was up in Washington, and Davey and I were talking about it, and we're just like, yeah, it's here. We're 5 games in already. Actually, you know what? Here, let's take a break. When we get back, I'll get into the Washington trip. It was a great time.
All right, we'll get into the Washington trip when we get back.
Is apparently when you live on Sunset Strip, sometimes you walk in and to your building and you find people sprawled out, passed out apparently.
Yeah, right now there's a gentleman, a guest of my, one of my few neighbors that I have left in the building on Sunset, and walked in, and you know, there's Harley the Wonder Dog, Hollywood's favorite dog. Harley was there to greet. He greets a lot of people coming to my building late at night, and it's always nice to see Harley. But right next to Harley was the a slumped over figure of a man who had drank clearly too much, and his friends had simply abandoned him, were laughing at him. The guy's drunk on his feet, he's just bent over the waist. It's like basically walking in your building and just seeing a huge butt crack, you know, a nice you know, plumber crack as soon as you walk in. And hey, that guy's so drunk he can't even sit upright, and it's hilarious.
Well, I saw a little bit of that this, so I flew up to Spokane on Wednesday and did flew into Spokane on Wednesday and did the Spokane Comedy Club there. Just opened. Actually fantastic. Any listeners in Northern Idaho, Eastern Washington, you know, make the drive 30 minutes, hour, whatever it is. Or maybe it's down the street.
How is Washington? How is the whole trip? Tell us more.
Washington is a weird state. It's beautiful. And then on the eastern side, it looks like Kansas. And it's ugly as shit.
That is the crazy thing. It's like people sell you Seattle. They sell you Seattle. They sell you the Douglas fir trees. But really, that's just the five. It's everything west of the five. It's the very coast. But everything east of the five is like eastern Washington, which is a lot of Washington.
Well, the five goes up the west.
It is basically where you would shoot Smallville. You would shoot Smallville anywhere in eastern Washington. And there had to be some law, Caesar, I'm pretty sure, that you're not allowed to knock down a dilapidated old barn. It's like every piece of property in eastern Washington had like a building that was falling apart.
Well, it's
on the property.
So you've got like, you know, the plains looking area. Then you've got this weird like dead rocky kind of area where there's like, you know, like maybe like sand dune kind of thing. You know, just kind of desert.
Oh, yeah, those sand dunes are weird, too. The sand dunes in Oregon, too. And they also have some weird meteor lake or something that happens Washington and Oregon.
And then you have, like, you know, on the far west side, Forks, you know, from the Twilight series, which is a legitimate rainforest. It rains enough there that it classifies it as a rainforest. So you have, like, all these different climates. And I'll tell you all more about it because I'm going back to Washington in 2 weeks for that Royals series up in Seattle. Which, by the way, if you're going, anybody listening, if you're going to the Royals series, tweet at me. Love to meet up, have a drink, talk Royals before the game. So fly to Spokane.
Hashtag meet with cheese. Hashtag meet with cheese.
Hashtag John is here. J-O-N is here. So I get to Spokane the day that Sabonis, Arvydas Sabonis' son, I forget his first name, but he announces he's going pro, you know, it'll be a top 10 pick. So everyone's kind of devastated but excited because he'll probably become the best pro out of Gonzaga when it's all said and done. But went and toured, you can't even really say toured Gonzaga's campus. It's tiny. It's like 4x3 blocks or something. Just like a real small, like, Christian Catholic school. I can't remember which one, but...
that is interesting, though. You're right. Sabonis' kid probably is, like, the best NBA prospect to come out of Gonzaga.
Because Morrison was a bust. Ronnie Turioff, I mean, he was decent. He played, you know, he played with the Lakers when they were good. I can't even, yeah, the Dan Dickow, he played 2 years, maybe three. And that, you know, that was 15 years ago or something. You know, so.
Well, I'm just saying, like, Gonzaga is like, look, Gonzaga has made a great run for many years into the big dance. And in some ways, but they also seem like a team of Bobby Hurley's, if you understand what I mean. It's like a team of Bobby Hurley's or Jimmer Fredette, except none of them are actually Jimmer Fredette or Bobby Hurley. And it's a weird thing where you're like, you never actually remember who the members of these crappy Gonzaga three-point shooting teams are.
I mean, I can tell you that John Stockton's kid went there, you know, that, and like he graduated, sure. You know, he went through there and you're like, oh, it was the opposite. You know, like you had the two guys, the Baker and then the Van Fleet or whatever, Wichita State. It seemed like those guys played there forever. Or like when Fred Hoiberg was at Iowa State, seemed like he was there 7 years. You know, like John Stockton's kid was the opposite. It was like, oh, he's gone already? Oh, okay, that was quick. He made no impact at all.
I always thought that Fred Hoiberg was the mayor, was there for 7 years. I always thought that... for people who are older than you, she's Anthony Carter was a great wide receiver from Michigan Wolverines. He seemed like he was at the most Michigan Wolverines for like 7 years.
Oh, and while you're on
the first USFL title with the Michigan Panthers, he ended up like in Detroit or something like that, or Minnesota. But there is that weird thing that sometimes a college player time changes and they just seem like they have been there forever. Or, you know, and then there are those other players like a Scooney Penn, who's like an amazing, like he's amazing for the BC Eagles, and then shows up later as a transfer for Ohio State. That is impressive in two different schools because of the transfer.
Well, I mean, I'll go back to Michigan. Look at like Chad Henne. I think he was there from, I don't know, maybe like 02 to 06 or something like that. But he started as a freshman and, you know, all 4 years. And so in some aspects, you know, look at that career versus, let's say, RG3 in Washington, who was like a year and some change, maybe 20, 25 games. So, no, it's like no wonder it seems like that guy's around forever, you know? And then, obviously, your ESPN coverage and all that kind of stuff. So, it's like a very, you know, if you start 4 years in college, it's like that spreads out over a long period of life. Plus, you got spring games and all that stuff, too. But anyway, so we get up there, drive around Spokane. It was, you know, actually, I was impressed. There's actually a downtown. It's an old city, you know, and so most of the infrastructure building-wise downtown is like, you know, 1920, 1930 high-rises. And
sure.
So it kind of has like an old city feel to it, which is kind of cool. And then
old lumber money.
Well, and there's a river that goes right through the middle. It's like a nice dam and a big waterfall. It's like it's like a mini, mini, mini Niagara Falls kind of thing. And so did a couple shows and then went to down to Davey's hometown in Soap Lake, Washington, at this it's like a pseudo biker bar called the Del Red, and did a show there, had a great time, and then I opted for sober driving, and I like driving at night, and so for me it was kind of like, look, you drink, this is your hometown, hang out with your people, and then when you're done, like, I just want to get in the car and then let's go to the west side. Just get the driving done right now, and then you know, mess around, try to check into the hotel early, and then just sleep all day. And then we don't have to worry, have to worry about driving like 4 hours in the morning. It's like, that's the worst. Like waking up and then getting in the car. It's just the, and so finally about 2 a.m., pack it up, load up the car, start heading to, get to Tacoma, Washington about, I think it was like 6 a.m. And I'm wide awake because I've been 5 hour energies. Davey's sleeping and his eyes are open when he sleeps. So it's creepy as hell. And so you're just like, are you asleep? And you're like, you are, but your eyes are kind of open. Like so we got time to kill. And, so I call the hotel. It is like 7 a.m. And so I pull into this, casino in Tacoma. It's right across from the Tacoma Dome. And, which Tacoma is kind of a shithole. Like I come to find out late. I thought Tacoma was something else. And then I actually drove around and anyway, I'll get to that later. But so I go in, win a quick $30 playing roulette, put that $17.20 down, split it, and one coin on each. That's a Toby. Toby's a $17.20 split, either one of those, and Jordan, $23. And so hit that, walked out, called the hotel. He's like, we don't have any reservations. I'm like, you don't have any reservations? So I text the booker. He gets back to me a couple hours later. And at this point, it's like 9 o'clock. I'm exhausted because I've been up all night. And I think I took a nap for like 30 minutes in the car, which, so at that point, you just feel like a crackhead because you've been up all night on energy drinks. You're taking a nap in a car at 9 a.m. and get the call back. Don't get the hotel thing situated until about 1 o'clock. So there's no need for early check-in. We can just check in at this point. But in killing time before we got the hotel thing figured out, because where the gig was actually an hour south of Tacoma. We drove up to the bay. I got out. I'm reading this book called A Fall Spring by Pat Jordan, written in the early 70s, but based on his life as a prospect pitcher. And this was before the draft, so it was kind of this weird bidding system between baseball teams. So it's set in 1958-59, and he ends up signing with the Braves, and it goes through his Yankee tryout. It's a really good book, and it's on some people's top 50 all time sports books, kind of that thing. I think it's like number.
Is this ball four? What are we talking about?
It's called A False Spring. I don't know if you've ever.
False Spring, got it.
And so 3 year minor league career, and then into journalism and that. So where I'm at page like 100, and so he just got to McCook, Nebraska as an 18-year-old. And a little bonus, so since the book was written in 73-74, so it's kind of cool because he's like, and there was a young knuckleballer who ended up having a pretty decent career named Phil Niekro. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Because little did you know, it's like that guy ends up in the Hall of Fame 20 years after the book's written. So at the time, just the fact that he had played 5 years in the major leagues when the book was just like, oh, man, that was a pretty good career for this knuckleball guy. And so sat down, killed a couple pages in that. And then out of nowhere, I was like, oh, there's a AAA team, the Tacoma Rainiers. Unfortunately, they had a 5 o'clock game that night, so we couldn't make it. But I was like, I wanted to see the stadium. It was like 5 minutes away, so we drove and checked that out. Actually tweeted a picture of it on the Sportsaholics account, so you can check that out, listeners. It's a classic minor league park, brand new. They had the barbecue things and they had the amusement park in the outfield for the kids and all that kind of stuff. But finally get to the hotel. Out of nowhere, there's traffic everywhere on Saturday at like noon, heading south. Check in at the hotel like 1:30, and don't even have time to wash the clothes. So I do the just dry it with the dryer sheets just to freshen them up. I was like, yeah, that's good enough. That's good enough. And so do the gig. I get like 4 hours of sleep, and which is fine because when you've had no sleep for like 28 hours, 4 hours feels like eight almost. You're just like. It was, but I woke up immediately. It's like, I don't remember sleeping. You know, it's just like all of a sudden you wake, pop back up, shower, get dressed, and then we just check out because we're leaving. I got to be at the airport back in Spokane Sunday morning at 6 a.m. And this is Saturday night. Right. And so go do the show. It's at the Riverside Country Club in Chehalis, Washington. Great time. Jenna, the manager there, is awesome. Guys, if you ever want to go get some golfing in, if you live in Portland or even Seattle, just drive down. It's like an hour south, an hour north. Meet. It's right in the middle. Nice golf course. Jenna's the manager. Just tell them John sent you. Say she's her. She'll say who. Be like, that guy that came, that always comes with Davey Wester and Tim Gaither. And she'll be like, oh, I love him. He's awesome. No, you don't get a discount. But that's cool that you know him. And so do the show. And then it was weird. Like the headliner was this this comedian that does that, like books a lot of shows in the Northwest. And so people like kiss this comedian's ass all the time. And
yeah,
so Davey had some thing with this comedian in the past, and I guess they had tried to book a show in Davey's hometown, the same gig we had done. And the owner is just like this no nonsense, you know, biker guy. And he was like, no, we have a show. And the comedian's like, no, nah, it'll be better. Tried to sell it. And the guy's like, no, we're good. And then some other thing. And anyway, this comic was just like kind of an asshole. It was like just, I don't know. I don't want to get into too details just because I'll get, you know, a little bit worked up. But I'm like, yeah, you don't have to be a dick. And I didn't need anything from them. So I'm like, I'm not kissing their ass. But at the same time, I'm not being an asshole either. But when I'm getting, you know, they're like, you came all the way up here for this? And I'm like, no, I didn't. What else did you do? Who are you? By the way, you know, I'm like, I just introduced myself with a smile, and that's the like the second thing you say back to me. And so after that, I was like, all right, whatever. And then let them go on with their thing. And they're like, yeah, I do this and this. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then said some other kind of like backhanded comment. And I was like, you know what? Enough of this. I'm like, you know what? In fact, we're probably not going to be able to hang out. I go, they're like, you going to hang out later? I'm like, ah, you know, I can't because I got to get back to California where I live, you know, and go do some shows at the Comedy Store down La Jolla. And, you know, just like, I didn't want to like pull, like, dude, who's got the biggest dick or what thing, you know? It's like,
right.
I didn't, they just felt very like insecure and like immediately led with the, I do all this crazy stuff. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I really don't. And I don't want any of that crazy. I don't want a piece of that either. And so, you know, and so it was just like weird thing where I guess like maybe they felt threatened or something. And like, all I'm trying to do is get my legs back. I haven't really been getting on stage. I mean, the shows went all right. I mean, I got laughs, but there was no fluidity at all. And like, I was working out some new stuff, and but it just jumped around a lot, you know. And it was one of those things where the stuff that crushed the one night didn't the next, and the stuff was flip flopping. There just wasn't consistent. And but there were good results, and it felt good up there. I ended up getting about an hour and a half worth of stage time over the course of the 4 days, so that was good. Which is an hour and a half more than I've gotten, you know, or maybe an hour more than I've gotten over the past, you know, 6 months. So it was good.
What else do we need to talk about?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll wind everything down.
All right, love it.
But
right back after this.
The point of the story is, I survived Washington, tired as shit. Kind of felt like a tweaker by the time I got back to the airport. But yeah, so after the show, we just the comic goes on after Davey, and Davey comes back. He's like, let's just go. I'm like, cool, because my flight was 6 a.m. We had to drive 6 hours to get there, and so we just pack up, loaded up, didn't have to speed, wasn't concerned about being late, get there, and then end up bumping into one of the old chefs I worked with in North Dakota. Shout out to Dwayne.
Wow.
Shout out to Dwayne Dees up in Alaska. He's like in that same area where that white trash family that lives and builds their house, and the kid's name's Bear, and it's on like the History Channel. It's like one of their most popular shows. It's like, but it's south of Juneau, so it's not really Alaska. It's like Canada. It's like Canada's rat tail. It's like the rat tail part. You know what I mean?
Kind of, I do.
It's the mullet. It's Alaska's mullet part that, like, you know, drips down. And so, but it, yeah, I'm just going.
Panhandle. It's that. Yeah, part of Florida. Yeah. It's really Florida. It's, I know. It's really, yeah, Alabama or one of them other states. I get you. That panhandle, you know, part.
I just invented. How many panhandles are there in America? 3. Florida, Oklahoma, and Alaska. Little known fact. We just invented a trivia question. But I've never had the random bump into someone really at the airport. And it was cool. Got caught up for like 20 minutes. And then at this point, it's like 4 a.m. And the lady comes out and goes, sir, are you on the 6 o'clock to Seattle? And he's like, yeah. She's like, well, we got room on this 5 o'clock if you want to just leave now. And then he looks at me and he was like, well, we've caught up. I'm like, yeah, get on the flight. He's like, all right, cool. But it was awesome because it was this weird kind of, yeah, 20, 25 minutes seems about right. We worked together for about a year and a half on and off, you know, for 3 weeks at a time sometimes. And but I'll never forget because he was like the kind of hard-ass manager guy. And the first day we worked, he like didn't like you putting your cups of water up on anything, and like had to be in a certain part of the kitchen. And so, which I didn't know. So my cup's up there and he comes in, and this is the first, I don't even know him. This is the first morning I'm in North Dakota. And so I'm just scared as shit anyway. Just like, what the hell's, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen the next 30 minutes. And so he comes in and he goes, whose cup is this? I was like, oh, that's mine. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. People leave your cups up here. I don't want to see it. I'm like, all right, that's cool. I go, that's funny. One of my biggest pet peeves is when people don't refill the ice trays. And then he just looks at me and he's just so confused. Because he was like, is he talking back to me? Or is he, but it's a pet peeve? And I was just so unimpressed with his authority that took him aback a little bit. But good guy, but it was great to see him.
I'll tell you this. You know what my pet peeve is? People with pet peeves. I'll tell you, that's a huge pet peeve of mine.
Really? It's just the ice, man. The ice tray thing right now is really my biggest pet peeve. All right, we're going to go to break. I survived Washington. We'll be right back.
Every time you wake up, working into the night, let me
All right, we are back, and I forgot the best part about the Washington. So, for the first time in my life, I've just walked into a store and bought weed, like it was cigarettes,
You just went into a weed store in Washington, which is amazing, Sheez, because you know I just went to Boulder. I mean, I went to Colorado, and of course they have the same laws, but in a weird twist of fate, I actually didn't go to any of the legal recreational weed stores. It was no different a gig for me. So what was it like to actually go into the, I mean, we both have had medical marijuana and you've gone into California stores, but what was it like to go into a Washington, hey, it's no big thing store?
Well, okay, I got my medical marijuana card because Duels used to do those shows at the medical pharmacies, and it was awesome because but you had to have the card to get in, but they didn't make us pay because we were comics, and it was a cool deal. And what's weird about these stores is they're almost, you remember like a month before Radio Shack closed?
Yes.
And you'd walk by and everything's just, it's just barren and empty, and you're just like, what is this? Like, this is still, like, what's, who?
Yeah.
It just looks weird. That's what they're all like that, because they're just selling weed, but they have to fill up this space, and it's like, and then there's the glass case with the pipes, but then that's just over in the corner, and it's just kind of funny. But okay, so customer service top notch. I think this place was called Green Star in Spokane. Shout out to Green Star. And so you walk in, what can I help you with? And you get your own kind of like customer service rep. And then they just kind of walk you through everything. What do you, well, I just got into town. Oh, hey, that's great. And so what are you looking for? I don't know. Just something that's not expensive as shit. And I didn't want to like have a bunch of weed, you know? So I was like, I'll just get an eighth. And so got an eighth and, you know, they're like, oh, you know, get you your lighters or zigzags, all that stuff. And then at that point they put like this little piece of paper that's like a, it's pretty much like the card for whatever it's, I guess their inventory. So they take the card, like you want this number. They take it to this lady behind a counter. She goes back into the vault, pulls that number,
sure,
puts it in and, you know, very in and out. And then it's right next to a pizza place. So then you just walk over there and grab some pizza and it's, it's so I have this, this weed in this like brown paper bag, and it just looks, you know, the thing on it and the medical stamp and all that stuff. What's cool is they have it all broken down by percentages of THC and what else is in it. And, it, you know, it's all been tested. So that I appreciated that. So it's like it actually says this is, you know, 28% versus the 14%, you know, over here. And that that explains the price, you know, and things like that. And, you know,
I got my 80 proof. I got my 100 proof. I got my 99 proof whiskey. I get it.
So after the show in the town that Davey's parents live in, I drove back because Davey had had a few and I wasn't drinking. And so I had this in the passenger side door and it's in this bag. So when Davey gets out, apparently he like it falls out. And so we don't know, whatever. So the next morning we get up, we're sitting there talking to Davey's dad, and his mom walks in and goes, "Davey, is this yours?" And she's just holding that bat, my weed. Davey's mom is. And this is like the ultimate, like when you're 15, 16 years old, this is like the worst possible scenario that you could imagine.
Yeah.
Your friend's mom holding your weed. And I go, "Oh, nope, that's not Davey's. That's my legal pot." I go, "That's my legal marijuana." And I just grabbed it. I go, "Yeah, I got really bad anxiety. I can't stand in lines." And then Davey's dad chimes in with like, "I've got really bad anxiety too." He's like, "I actually haven't smoked anything since 1979. He was like, maybe we should trade medication. I was like, just started laughing. It was great. So I was like, "Yeah, I don't want any of your medication, sir. But what I will do is I'll just go and roll you up two spliffs because since I'm here." And so I went out there. I was like, "Hey, here you go. What do you think of these?" And he was like, "Okay."
Big shout out to Davey Wester, guys. If you're in Washington State, give a look out for Davey Wester. Good friend of ours. Good friend of the show. And a mad shout out to his dad and his mom. You're loved, all right? We love you guys a lot. Thank you guys a lot.
And rest in peace, Sugar. The family dog passed away yesterday, but I was happy enough. It was one of those things where Davey goes, "It's one of those dogs. She doesn't let anyone touch her. She's just kind of skittish." But guess who was petting Sugar when we left town? This guy right here.
She's in Sugar. I get it.
Loved me. But anyway, rest in peace, Sugar, as well. So anyway, what do you think? Let's move on to sports, and then we'll get out of here. Golden State Warriors, 73 wins. They haven't played. It's tonight. They're going to get it. Does that matter? I mean,
I thought it was amazing. It's an amazing game. It's an amazing thing. I watched the game. It was also an amazing thing where, you have the, you know, the San Antonio Spurs, who also having sort of a top five, top ten all-time season themselves, but they're trailing the Warriors. You know, that was their first loss at home. Like, the win that tied the all-time record for most wins in the NBA was also the first loss that San Antonio had experienced at home all season. And San Antonio was basically two games away from setting their own record. That is how interesting a game that was.
No, it's like
it was really.
Yeah, it's like you can't get any better than that. I mean, for a regular season, I mean, I'm just happy for the playoffs. I mean, because we all know, buckle up your seatbelts, because the next 5 months of NBA playoffs are going to be exciting as hell.
Well, it is, because look, and then now we also have, like, look, now what the Warriors have done is similar to, say, the Seattle Mariners 116 win or the New England Patriots perfect regular season. It's like, look, they put up one of the all-time great regular seasons. But now, if you don't land this plane, if you don't complete this transaction, if this doesn't actually come away with a championship, then, you know, then it isn't the best season of all time. I mean, it's like, right now, you're like, yes, if you win that final game against the Memphis Grizzlies, you will have a better all-time season record than the 72-10 Chicago Bulls. But if you don't get a championship, you actually are less than those Bulls, if that makes sense. It's like, who would you rather be? Would you rather be the 15-1 Chicago Bears that won a Super Bowl, or the 16-0 Patriots who lost the Super Bowl? Clearly, you want to be the champion. You have to be the championship. As we all know, you play to win the game. And it's like, that's an interesting thing. I think it's an amazing, Steph Curry, one of the more amazing things to me, Caesar, is not only have the Warriors, not only did they win a championship, and they actually got better after winning the championship and now setting a historical mark. What's interesting in all that, and if you follow me on this, is that the Splash Brothers and Klay Thompson specifically, even though while he is also having a great season, it's one of those weird things where your opinion of the Warriors and Steph Curry went up, but the opinion of, say, Klay Thompson and the Splash Brothers kind of went down. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, a little
bit. It's like it's less about this dynamic duo and more about Steph Curry being an all-time great player and the leader of this great all-time team versus this dynamic duo. You know, we're not talking Batman and Robin. We're not talking Jordan and Pippen anymore. We're not talking Splash Brothers. We're not talking, like, you know, Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco Bash Brothers. We're now talking, you know, it's Steph, it's Buddy Holly and the Cricket.
Yeah, no, and that's, I think you need that. I mean, look at Oklahoma State. It's been Durant, Westbrook battling back and forth. You know, okay, now they've kind of figured this thing out where, okay, Durant, you get your points. He scored like 80 straight games, 20 or more points. That's his little record. And then Westbrook does the triple-doubles. He's got like 18 of them or something this year. And so,
see, to me, you know, it's weird. But, you know, this, one of those interesting things about this Warriors thing is making me think about James Harden and the Oklahoma City Thunder and how they, you know, a couple years ago, they made the decision to not keep Harden. And when they decided to not keep Harden, it was sort of like Oklahoma City decided to not really be a contender. They wanted to look like a contender, but not actually be a contender.
No, I don't think...
When you look at what the Warriors did, I mean, like, you know, Green, Iguodala, I mean, the interesting people, you know, it is an interesting squad that the Warriors have that I think is almost like a once-in-a-lifetime in some ways, that the talent is the talent where it is, when it is, on the salary cap as it is. I don't know if you can keep that team together going forward at all.
Yeah, but now you get into the people want to go there. You know, Iguodala could have played in Phoenix, you know, and you've got the logo up there, Jerry West running the show. I mean, everywhere that guy goes is you're gonna win, and he's proven that for 50 years. You know, from the court up to the, you know, executive office. And so that's, you know, that's a big part of it. But, I mean, if you look at their roster, you got, you know, Sean Livingston. And, yeah, he's blown out his knee twice and all that. But, you know, at one point he was like the third overall pick in the NBA draft. And, you know, you got Brandon Rush, who's like the 10th man. You know, he's a decent player. But you've got – everyone knows their role. But everyone at the same time is capable of going off for like 20, 25 points and just on any random night.
Oh, by the way, Caesar, by the time this thing airs, you know, Kobe Bryant will have played his last NBA professional game. So before we go, I just want to say, goodbye, Kobe. Goodbye, Kobe. It's time to say goodnight. Goodbye, Kobe.
No, I think you go.
Goodbye, Kobe. You've been irrelevant for 3 years. It's time to say goodnight.
No, I think you go with something with like, goodbye, Kobe Bryant. You raped that girl in her ass in Colorado and got...
Goodbye, Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I think
we'll
that...
We'll hang another loss on you.
Yeah, that's... I just, you know, it's like when they show the montage. We buy Kobe. Thank you, Kobe. It's like everyone in L.A. It's like... Really? You want your 9-year-old daughter?
No one cares. The greatest thing is the amount of silence that's going to happen. By next season, no one's going to talk about Kobe. It's going to be gone, silent. It's going to disappear like in a black hole. It's going to be crazy, the sucking sound about how we're going to all stop talking about Kobe. Because nobody likes Kobe. The state of the Lakers that they're in is because of Kobe. Kobe has done more damage to the Laker franchise in the last 5 years than Cal Ripken did to the Baltimore Orioles. And guys, just so you know, Cal Ripken ruined the Baltimore Orioles for about 5 years.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, it just... People do care, but it's in L.A., but they don't, I mean, on a national level... I've never liked Kobe, ever. He's always been like kind of the asshole. I mean, maybe that's just me, but when he talks,
I liked him when he got drafted and when he took Randy to his prom, and that was really the last thing I liked about Kobe Bryant.
You know, and I like that he was traded with Vlade Divac. That's kind of, you know.
I will also always tell you that Eddie Jones could have had his first 3 rings. Eddie Jones could have had those rings. And anyone who knows basketball knows that to be true.
Yep, and so shout out to Philly there in Temple. And
I would also give a massive shout out to Paul Gasol, the most underrated big man in the modern era. It was like Paul Gasol is as big as sort of the Boston Celtic big three, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce deal, because that immediately put the Lakers into contention. And what was great for Paul Gasol, or more importantly, what was great for Kobe Bryant, is that Paul Gasol was a foreign player, spoke Spanish, and really didn't care about Kobe getting all the press that Kobe wanted. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
An American-born player, he just wouldn't have stood up for it.
Yeah, he was like 20.
And they would have had bigger problems.
Yeah, no, it was great. And then you got the Kobe, tell me how my ass tastes. You know, let's not forget about that.
That is the greatest thing of all time. I love
Kobe,
you, Shaq.
Tell me how my ass tastes. Kobe, tell me how my ass tastes.
With all that said, Kobe, land this plane.
All right, episode over. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at Sporksaholics. Like I said, we got some pictures up from my travels in Washington. Eric at That Marino. Oh, that Marino.
That Marino.
Are you tweeting?
Guys, tell me, if you're in L.A., Sunday nights at the World Famous Comedy Store, Sunday nights, 11 to 1, the show up, go up, open mic variety show. You can listen to us at Sportsaholics. Also, I'd like to give a shout-out to Verbal Violence, the Roast Battle podcast, and Clean Ed, the Ed and Clean show. I recently did a couple podcasts for them. Simply Dawn, the podcast. Check them out. Keep looking. By the way, guys, Atlantic City with Leslie Jones is going to be rescheduled for April, and I'll let you know when that happens. That's everything I got. Cheezer, where are you appearing next?
I'll be in the Midwest in mid-May. If you go to johnjonishere.com, going to go to Lincoln, Springfield, Missouri, Topeka, Kansas, and Kansas City. Still trying to find a venue in Kansas City, but all the info, again, is at johnishere.com. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We're done.
Same stuff.
You bring I joy.
why should I?